Welcome, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I'm Mary Mullen, a member of the Program Committee. Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, whatever your sexual orientation, or your family structure. We welcome you no matter what your age, no matter what your abilities or your inabilities. And then later in the service, we'll have a chance for any visitors or guests or returning friends who haven't been here for a while to introduce yourselves so that we might get to know you better. On Sundays, we provide a large variety of services. They're either presented by a Prairie member, a member of the wider community, which we hope to have today, or by our minister, Jane Espenson. Today, we're going to have Amit Manger speak about how Hinduism affirms and promotes the seventh principle. The principles are on the back of your order of service here. The seventh one is the last one, which is respect for the interdependent web of the existence of which we are all a part. Well, it's time for the story. And our favorite story reader, Rose Smith, will be reading the story of the Hindu creation. Kids and any adults that want to, come on up and sit on the rug and let's hear the story.
All right.
Yes.
This is the Hindu creation story. You know, we all want to know where we came from, who formed the earth and the heavens and everything. Well, this is the Hindu creation story. And I'm going to ask you, when we come to Vishnu, we're going to make the sound, and everybody can do it with us when the time comes. And when we're done, I'm going to raise my hand so you can stop. Before time began, there was no heaven, no earth, and no space between. A vast, dark ocean washed upon the shores of nothingness and licked the edges of the night. A giant cobra floated on the waters. Asleep within its endless coils lay the Lord Vishnu. He was watched over by the mighty serpent. Everything was so peaceful and silent that Vishnu slept undisturbed by dreams or motion. Ready? From the depths, a humming sound began to tremble. Om, om, om. It grew and spread, filling the emptiness and throbbing with energy. The night had ended. Vishnu awoke. As the dawn began to break from Vishnu's navel, that's his belly button, grew a magnificent lotus flower. In the middle of the blossom sat Vishnu's servant, Brahma. He awaited the Lord's command. Vishnu spoke to his servant, "It is time to begin." Brahma bowed. Vishnu commanded, "Create the world." And this is a picture of Lord Vishnu. See everybody? Nice to have a picture of the Lord. Brahma, the god of creation. A wind swept up the waters. Vishnu and the serpent vanished. Brahma remained in the lotus flower, floating and tossing on the sea. He lifted up his arms and calmed the wind and the ocean. Then Brahma split the lotus flower into three. He stretched one part into the heavens. He made another part into the earth. With a third part of the flower, he created the skies. The earth was bare. Brahma set to work. He created grass, flowers, trees, and plants of all kinds. To these he gave feeling. Next, he created the animals and the insects to live on the land. He made birds to fly in the air and many fish to swim in the sea. To all these creatures, he gave the senses of touch and smell. He gave them power to see, hear, and move. The world was soon bristling with life, and the air was filled with the sounds of Brahma's creation. And that's the end of that story. And here are the pictures again. Lord Vishnu and Brahma. See everybody? Thank you for being such good listeners. Okay.
'Cause and some of them are, he's General Secretary of the Association of Indians in America, the Madison chapter, for 2 years in a row. He's a board member of the American Hindu Association for the past 5 years, and he's been vice president since for a year. He's also an organizing member of the Interfaith Awareness Week celebrations representing the Hindu community of the Greater Madison Interfaith Association. And he's also an active volunteer with the Madison chapter of the Art of Living Foundation. It's a global organization promoting stress-free living, which we could all use, and universal human values. So I'd like to invite Amit to come up, and he's going to be talking to us about how Hinduism affirms and promotes the seventh principle. And I think you're probably aware that after you speak, we'd like to ask questions and make comments.
Well, thank you, Mary. Thank you for your kind words. Actually, I wouldn't like to call this a presentation. Let's keep it interactive. So I think it'll be more productive that way. It'll help answer a lot of your questions. Just to set the ball rolling, I couldn't help but notice a few things before coming up to the podium. One thing that stood out immediately was the ringing of the chalice there to create a sound. And then everybody meditated. And then when it was rung again, then people stopped. Or those who wanted to continued, I guess. My back was towards the rest of the audience. I couldn't see really what was going on. But I'm assuming that most people continued meditating because meditation is a wonderful thing. It's part of the stress-free living. The other thing I noticed was the reading itself. It was a very nice reading you did. And I would like to take off from there, like the word, the sound, Om. And as we go along, we'll build this. I'll weave in what a Hindu philosophy is. By the way, even to start talking about Hinduism, it'll be a great injustice to a culture. Because there's nothing called Hinduism. It's a word that got coined somewhere in like maybe 12th or 13th century or something when India was getting discovered, kind of a thing, by the Western traders, trade routes were coming through the now Afghanistan, Pakistan area. They were filtering in, and the first thing they encountered was the Sindhu River. And Sindhu, from there, the word, and the people beyond, living beyond that, you have to remember the geography of those days or the topography of those days. There was hardly anything or anybody living in the erstwhile Iran, Iraq. There was pretty much barren land. It's all desert. The world population was not what we have today anyway. It was probably the tenth of what we have now. So you can imagine how widely scattered humanity was. And these were, there were wide expanse of nothingness. And so the first set of population that the people who were, the explorers were coming through, encountered was right around the Sindhu Valley civilization. And that's where, and they found that they follow some kind of a belief system, and so they start calling them the Hindus. And that's how the Hinduism word came along. Otherwise, in reality, we refer ourselves as Sanatan Dharma, followers of Sanatan Dharma. And ironically or whatever, Sanatan Dharma is nothing but Unitarian Universalism. That's where it kind of translates to in a close enough way. I won't say exactly per se, but in a close enough way, it's a universal way of life. That's what is Sanatan Dharma. So it's close enough to Unitarian Universalism. So that's just to kind of set the tone of what Hinduism is. And would like now go on to the word Aum. While the reading was going on, we did Aum, like we all chanted the word Aum. What is Aum? Can anybody answer that? I'm asking a question first to you.
Breath?
It's a primordial sound which just resides in all of us. And it actually breaks down into three syllables, really. If you really close your eyes and try to visualize or really sense the whole pronunciation more closely, you'll realize that it's not Om, it's really Aum. Aum. So it breaks down to Aum. This is the primordial sound. This is the source of creation. Everything else is just stories. Just like we have Superman, Batman these days, these are our heroes. Same way we have Vishnu, Brahma, Mahesha, everybody, those are our superheroes. But in reality, Aum is undefined. It's just a sound that resides within you and me. And if we just, that's what the meditation, goal of meditation is, for us to be able to silence our minds to the extent that we can actually hear the Aum, which is omnipresent always in our ears. We are nothing but a composition of our, other than the material existence, our true essence, the spirit, is nothing but word, that is a sound, the breath. Wait a minute, I just got distracted before, I lost my thoughts somewhere. We are nothing but sound, light, and vibration. If we take these things, these three elements out of our existence, we might as well be in the grave. Have you ever realized that? And the problem with the society in general, or the world, these days, is we get so hung up on what is externally available to us. We think this is it. What we don't realize is that the sound, the light within, and the vibration, there's a constant humming inside of us which we don't even realize, because we have created all these sounds around us to suppress it. Or not knowingly, unknowingly, we have suppressed it. We don't even realize that there is a sound within us. So Aum, if we just focus on, do meditation regularly, it's not only helpful for stress-free living, but also it's a huge step toward spirituality. Calming the mind, because once you calm the mind, only then you realize that there is a sound which you had never heard before, and it's always there. You cannot make it go away. There's no volume, there's no switch that you can turn off, turn on the volume, nothing. It's just there. That is the Aum Nad, or the Aum sound, the Aum vibration. And that's how we are all connected, because you and I are no different. Externally, yes, you're wearing a nice shirt, I'm not, I'm wearing something else. You got a Rolex watch, I'm not, or whatever. That doesn't matter. But within, once you clear away all these different layers which are so earthly only, because it came from the dust, we made it from the dust, it'll go back to the dust. What will always remain is that Aum sound, the vibration of the divine existing within us all the time. and the light. The light, not the external lights. There is a light within us which we, it's hard to see. It comes through a lot of yogic practices. And that's why in Bhagavatam also the divine said that after we regard Lord Krishna as one of the incarnations of the divine, as a wholesome incarnation of divine, as close to Vishnu as you can get. But a whole different story of what Vishnu is anyways, because we are talking of A-U-Ma, which is nothing but we're saying Brahma, A, Vishnu, U, Mahesha, M. So, and the three, which is the three functions of this sound that always persists in the universe, to create, to protect, and then to destroy, and start the creation all over again. This happens all the time, anywhere you go, at the microscopic level to a huge cosmic level. You look at it, look at the astronomers are finding out, oh, here is a black hole that suddenly exploded, and now we have a galaxy there. All right. What made it do it? And then there are microbiologists who are looking down through a microscope and so on. They're finding there's a cell, there's nothing, then they see a speck, then something breaks up, becomes a cell. Two cells, four cells. Oh my God, it's an organism. It is alive. So basically it's all there. We all living creatures, including plants, have this. It's just the nature of things because of which some people can realize it, some people cannot realize it, or some, let me say, some things, I'm treating us also as things, have the ability to realize it, some do not because of the way they have been created. And hence rolls in the concept of respecting all living creatures and organisms. That is all pervasive in the Hindu philosophy. I'm using the Hindu philosophy, the Hindu word now, because of lack of any other word in the Western media or world. So, anytime you see any thing that lives, be it small, be it big, be it cosmic, we are all connected to the same thing, because eventually that's what it is. Just the presence of a sound, light, and vibration. After that, we, because of our own limited vision or sense of perception, have started creating different manifestations or trying to understand our, just in order to wrap our brains around what the divine energy is. Because it is there, yet it is not visible, we have started creating, for lack of better words, gods, which we call by different names in different societies, in different cultures. Then came along the rituals around it, born more out of the circumstances of the local society. So we consider ourselves very modern, but I think our old sages were much more modern than we are. They were modern because wherever they were born, or whichever situation, society they were living in, they came up with these beautiful cultures and different rituals, per se, which actually suited the environment of that area. And then the religion, or whatever the concept, let's say, not religion, let's call it just a concept of what that sage was propounding, expanded and grew out into the world. But the followers got hung up with the rituals he created for that area, which are no longer relevant in a different area. You see what I mean? It's like, so it's really up to us to really recognize this, the fact, and if we really want to call ourselves modern, to recognize this and move forward with it. Rituals are nice because they do bring us to, helps us to bring our focus, because mind is like a monkey. Keeps jumping. Have you ever noticed? If you just sit around, try to close your eyes, you think you're meditating. Really? Try it. Real meditation is when your mind is not thinking anything at all. When I mean anything, I mean anything. It's not even conscious of its own presence. Can you achieve that level? No way. You'll always be constantly my mind is thinking. Even just that thought, occurrence of that thought itself is that the fact that your mind is active, it is not settling down. So, once we settle down this mind, we can really realize what the sound that is omnipresent, the light that's always within us, which we can see even with our closed eyes. And believe me, it's very bright. It's more than 1,000 suns. I've had a glimpse of it, not the whole experience. By divine grace, I've had a glimpse of it. But it is just magnificent. No light on planet Earth can create that light that is within. And the vibration, I'm not lucky yet to realize that vibration. It was supposed to be sitting somewhere here and vibrating constantly. I've been trying to work on it, but not successfully yet. So meditation, the goal of meditation is mainly to quieten the mind to a degree where you can actually feel the divine within you. And that's when, that is the aha moment that changes. That's how sages are born. So essentially there is a sage within all of us. If we just take the time and focus our energies, starting with the mind, it's very critical to focus the mind first, because everything else permeates from that. The moment when the mind starts thinking about something, I'm itchy here. Oh God, I'm feeling scratchy here. Why is that alarm going off right now and then? My refrigerator, wish I had a quieter one. It never stops. You would think that I'm not jumping around, my mind is just thinking of one thought at a time. But the fact that it is thinking, that means it's taking you away from the realization of the sound, light and vibration, which connects all of us. And is also included, and even the plants and the animals, they also have it, but the nature of their existence limits them from ever even realizing it. Although in our Puranas, there are stories of even animals reaching that level, because by some divine grace, they got a mind that could think. So it's very weird. We are unique than the animals because we have a mind that can think. At the same time, this mind itself is our biggest enemy in terms of spiritual growth and God realization. So mind is a good thing in order to... So when you're not in meditation, when you're going about, it's necessary to use our minds in order to do the right thing in the planet, on planet Earth, to be able to care for everybody and to really feel what each person feels. We all have the same pains, we have the same joys, we have the same happiness, sorrows, hurts, everything. The emotion, the kaleidoscope of emotions is the same for all of us. But if we, the challenge to mankind, which Lord Krishna threw when he was expounding Bhagavad Gita, is to quieten the mind and realize him, to realize his presence. No matter which way you want to take it, there are so many different ways of doing it, through Christianity, through Islam, through Buddhism, through Jainism, Hinduism of course, or pure yogic traditions, which even transcend any of these. They kind of embrace all the different traditions and call it as their own, and they go forward with a pure spirituality. No matter which path you take, eventually his challenge is to, for us to take up the challenge, and sorry, his word is that it's up to mankind to take the challenge and realize me. I'm always there. It's up to you to take up the challenge, and because I've given you a thinking mind which can take up challenges. If you can take up challenges of, I can make this building, I can invent something here or do something there, why can't we take the challenge of realizing which is already there? You don't have to create it at all. So, but he did expound that after I'm gone, because he was on planet Earth in a mortal form. So he knew that at some point he has to go back to his existence as Vishnu, as you said, and which is just our creation also, because we do not know how best to describe him. Once he has left the planet Earth, he said there'll be billions of people coming to the Earth, which is true. Our population is just exploding while the Earth is crumbling. Out of those billions, there'll be only a few millions who will even start looking for me, likes of you and I, who have at least chosen to, who are regular at church or temple or something, who have chosen some way to at least start connecting with the divine. Out of those millions, there'll be only a few thousands who will even start coming close to me. Very true. The gurus that we see, the church leaders and the priests we see, they are the few thousands, handful, who have actually started coming closer to him. And out of those thousands, they'll be just counting few on the fingers who will actually reach me. And we know that that is so true. Buddha, Jayanta Tirthankaras, Christ, Prophet Muhammad, Baha'u'llah, these are people who are the only few. We can just count them. Our fingers are too much to count. We don't even need the second hand to count such people, such personalities who actually reached there. That's why they are so revered, because they became one with the divine himself. They reached that level of God realization that they reached that level. To me, it seems like Bhagavad Gita is playing out so very perfectly, even today. But because Bhagavad Gita is nothing but a song that runs through all of us, we may get distracted by different things, but it's always there. If you want to acknowledge it, fine. If you don't acknowledge it, fine. We cannot run away from it. Open to questions. Oh, one other thing I just wanted to add. I just got digressed about the sound. That's the thing. That is just what I realized was that the sound is nothing but very similar to what I constantly hear in my ears anyway. So it's just an external way of expressing the sound that's always within.
Thanks so much for coming, everyone. Please extend the hand of friendship to those around you, and then join us for coffee and conversation. The coffee's in the hall.